Soccer Show on World Football Daily.
Mexico starts work under Miguel Herrera, its fourth manager in just over a month. Chicharito and Carlos Vela face off in the UEFA Champions League. America is eliminated from the CONCACAF Champions League just one day before 10 of its players move to the national team. And Chivas has officially entered the relegation battle after falling to last place in the Liga MX. I'm Eric Gomez, and this is the Mexican Soccer Show. Welcome to our latest episode. I'm joined, as always, by Tom Marshall, Chalice's close personal friend. How are you, Tom?
Not bad. Yeah, it's a good chat to Chalice this week. He's a pretty entertaining person to talk to.
He's talkative, isn't he? Those answers you wrote down were pretty long and rambling. Johnny Rico's in San Diego gearing up for Mexico versus Finland at Qualcomm Stadium. How's it going, Johnny?
I'm doing pretty good. Not a lot of people are excited about this game as a Mexico visits usually are here in San Diego. Quick shout out to a new Twitter friend. Says I resemble Triple H, the Mexican Triple H. So,
this is why you listen to this podcast, everybody. It's the WWE references and
who is it? People.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no other reason to listen to this crap anyway, right? Naib Moran, as always, is in command of our stellar production all the way in Madrid. How you doing?
Good, Eric, over here. A busy week with the Champions League and you know, days, several hours away from the new Clásico with Carlo Ancelotti on the bench for Real Madrid. You know, today they played so-so, and we'll see. And pretty psyched about the game that happened a while minutes ago in Manchester with Vela and Chicharito.
Yeah, both teams, both big Spanish teams defeating big Italian teams this week in the Champions League. Barcelona besting Milan and Real Madrid beating Juventus just now. We're recording this on a Wednesday afternoon. It's Wednesday night for Naib, but we'll start with that. We'll start with the UEFA Champions League, Chicharito and Carlos Vela getting starts for Manchester United and Real Sociedad, respectively. Not a very good game if you were not able to catch it on the TV. 1-0 to Manchester United. Own goal, which Carlos Vela actually kind of had a hand in, loses the ball on the wing. Wayne Rooney picks it up, dribbles around three guys, fires it, hits the post, and Chicharito, who was offside, apparently created enough pressure for Iñigo Martinez to put the ball in the back of the net. And even though Chicharito was subbed off after 80 minutes, guys, I got to think that this is good news for him, and it's good news for the Mexican national team. We won't really get into Carlos Vela, as we all know. It's a very, very tricky situation with him. But Chicharito, I mean, Tom, well, we'll start with you. You're the big Manchester United fan. Chicharito had just 180 minutes going into this match with Manchester United the entire season. How big is it for him to get consistent minutes with the Red Devils?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you just have to look at the last couple of Mexico games where he just gets Panama and Costa Rica. And I don't think it was at the races, you know what I mean? I thought he was tried really hard. His movement's pretty natural, so it's not going to change. But it's just that last 5%, that finishing and you know, just get putting the ball in the net. And I think he needs some goals. I mean, I think he just needs to stick the ball in the back of the net a couple of times and get some confidence before the New Zealand game. I think you have to point out as well that Welbeck was injured and Van Persie was picked up a slight knocker. That's what they were saying. So you know, he did his two main kind of his two main competition were out. So, you know, that's important to mention as well.
Yeah, Johnny, and he didn't really get a lot of chances in front of goal, but still, having him out on the pitch with regular football, if you can call it that, just 80 minutes, of course, but it's still better than having him on the bench, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, any time a soccer player can get on the pitch, it's a good thing. Chicharito, you know, that understanding that he had with Rooney under Sir Alex Ferguson seems to have all been gone. So, you know, he's gonna be needing a lot more of this consistent gameplay to pick up that understanding, because Chicharito lives off the service of his teammates. So, you know, his teammates around him need to get back in sync with him.
Naib, would you predict that Chicharito gets called up to the national team against New Zealand for that second leg, knowing full well that he's ineligible for that first leg, even if he doesn't get minutes with Manchester United? Or is Miguel Herrera the type of guy who would bench him or not even call him up if he's not getting regular activity with Manchester?
Yeah, I think Miguel Herrera in the first days as official coach of El Tri has sort of mentioning that, you know, if he's going to call European-based players, he's probably going to call two. And, I mean, one of them that comes to mind first is Hector Moreno. Bring more solid to the defense will be important for El Tri. And then you can say maybe Ochoa. I think he's going to be, focus more on players that play in Mexico in the attack, I think. You know, Jimenez is in good form, Peralta's in good form. And I know that Chicharito started today in Champions League, but, you know, the whole change of flying the miles that Chicharito will have to fly, you know, England, Mexico, Mexico, New Zealand, I think it doesn't help the overall team for Mexico. And even though he started today, I do not see Chicharito as one of those two call-ups that Piojo Herrera might do in the coming weeks.
Well, yeah, that's absolutely right. And we saw Giovanni Dos Santos and Javier Aquino have rough outings for Mexico as well in the recent past, especially against Panama. And Chicharito not getting enough minutes. America basically donating half of its championship squad to this national team alongside with its head coach and its team president. But those 10 players aside, are we looking at a team that's increasingly moving towards a heavy Liga MX setup, a heavy Liga MX roster? Plenty of guys who had never received a call-up in the past getting the shout-out from Miguel Herrera over the past few days. One of those guys, Edwin Hernandez of León, Quick Mendoza, America. I think I'm missing a couple of players there. And
the Herrera kid from Pachuca.
Miguel Herrera, his namesake, yeah. From Pachuca. Miguel Herrera, the coach, giving plenty of these younger guys or these unproven guys with the national team opportunities to shine. It really speaks of how Miguel Herrera operates. You know, again, when Luis Mendoza was signed for America, a lot of people expected this guy to be just kind of an afterthought and pushed over to the bench. Started the season out in great form, benching Jesus Molina, who was at the Confederations Cup and is now with the national team. So again, I'll ask this again. Come time for New Zealand, let's put Finland out of the mirror for now. When it comes time to face New Zealand, how many European-based players do you guys expect to be on the squad?
I honestly only see two, which could be out of the following three, Guillermo Ochoa, Hector Moreno, or Diego Reyes. And, I mean, two of them coming out of America. Ochoa hasn't been at America for a while, never worked on Miguel Herrera, but a goalkeeper never really needs that much time to learn a new system. A goalkeeper's a goalkeeper. But Diego Reyes was key in that back line for Herrera to win that championship last season. So he knows Herrera's back line of five. That back line, that championship winning back line, all you need to do is replace Aquivaldo Mosquera with Rafa Marquez, Hector Moreno, and you have that line with Diego Reyes.
Yeah, I don't know. I also don't think he's going to call up many Europeans, but not exactly too happy about it. I don't think the type of players that he's brought in. I mean, I understand with the America base that he has no time to kind of forge a team and you know, especially with confidence low among some other players, but, you know, I just don't see the point of not calling in Giovanni Dos Santos. I mean, all right, he's not played the best for the national team, or Chicharito for that. You know, maybe he's not had the best year for the national team, but, I mean, at the end of the day, you're going to, you know, Quick Mendoza or Giovanni, really. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it says a lot about how messed up the process was, and I mean how emergent the situation is of putting Piojo Herrera as coach in the last days or so. If the process was done accurately and you know, followed the steps fully and picked the right coach, not a coach that would sort of mess up in the middle of the process like Chepo, I think we wouldn't be in this situation. I mean, the players like Giovanni Dos Santos, Javier Aquino should always be in the national team, like Chicharito as well. But the situation is so emergency that you need the players to be around the coach, like, basically a week. Like, I mean, the players won't be, not all the players will be playing in this jornada that's coming up.
You know, on one hand, I mean, these, go ahead, Johnny.
I did hear an interview on Univision Deportes Network here in the U.S. where Herrera explained that players like Luis Angel Mendoza, Escobosa from Santos, you know, these young players were called up for the Finland game to see how they fit into Herrera's system. Guys like Chaco Jimenez, who were left out for this Finland game, could still make the squad for New Zealand game. So this this call-up that he's asking for now, it definitely won't be the final call-up. You know, he still has a chance to call in someone like Giovanni Dos Santos, but I highly doubt it. Again, I can only see maybe two call-ups and more on the defensive side. I don't think he'll mess with his attacking portion of the field too much.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that the issue here is confidence. If we were to debate and talk about who are the best five Mexican players out there anywhere, playing anywhere, I don't think that most of us would choose more than maybe one guy from the Liga MX. You know, I think I would probably have Raul Jimenez, based on his run of form, on my list, but he would probably be five. You know, the other four guys I would choose would be Ochoa, Chicharito, Vela, and Giovanni Dos Santos, based on their club forms. But, you know, it's not going well for them. It's not going well for any of them, actually, except maybe for Vela and for Giovanni and Aquino when they're suited up for Villarreal. Take, for example, Hector Herrera. Hector Herrera playing yesterday, he's getting the start for Porto in the Champions League, and he gets sent off after 6 minutes, picking up both yellow cards in 20 seconds. You know, Diego Reyes not getting the lion's share of minutes over there. I mean, it was kind of anticipated that he wouldn't. Porto's a tough team to break into. Finally gets his first start with the team, I think, last weekend, and then immediately is shipped back to Porto B, where he gets 90 more minutes on Wednesday. But it's definitely not the type of competition that you want your starting center back or one of your starting center backs getting in any sort of football, whether it be Europe or Mexico. So I think the issue here is confidence and where they fit into the system. Giovanni has been time and again just not look comfortable out there for Mexico. Same for Chicharito. You know, Chicharito, I think, is used to something a little bit different with Manchester United. We could see it today against Real Sociedad. I mean, he's definitely used to being the last guy. The last guy who touches the ball, whereas with Mexico, he's kind of expected to pull back a little bit and try to help out the midfielders, usually pulling him away from the box. Another guy, and we'll get into this immediately, who's not having a good time over there in Europe, is Jonathan Dos Santos. Absent from the national team, of course, for several months due to his lack of activity. But looks like he could be out for an extended period of time. ACL ligament in his right knee came off from, was it a training session?
A training session, yeah.
Yeah, Naib, first and foremost, we failed to acknowledge your big promotion, your new job. Naib is working with the guys over there at Fox Deportes here in Latin America. He's going to be covering Real Madrid, Barcelona, as well as Mexicans abroad. So huge, huge, huge congratulations to you. And what, this is your first assignment, man.
Yeah, it
is. Your first assignment. Tell us about Jonathan Dos Santos.
No, I mean, it's one of those situations that you see. I mean, I wrote it on my Twitter when I heard about the news because it came right before the Champions League game started. I mean, he's a player that's waited and waited and waited for this moment to shine with Barcelona. And now that he gets this injury, tomorrow we will hear the news from the doctors early in the morning, I'm guessing. But, I mean, the picture that you see on the website from Barcelona, it's one of a lot of frustration coming out of Jonathan Dos Santos' face, sadness, of course. And you know, it's just a big blow for this player because he's always been waiting for the moment. Now he gets this injury that, you know, if it's really bad, it could be more than 6 months.
Yeah, usually that recovery time is about 8 or 9 months, even depending on the severity of the tear. 8 or 9 months. I mean, that's just cutting it a little bit short before the 2014 World Cup, and considering Jonathan's not getting any minutes with Barcelona anyhow, seems very difficult that he might be considered for that competition. So, I mean, again, would you expect, Naib, to see Jonathan Dos Santos, A, make the 2014 World Cup roster, or B, move on from Barcelona to another club after the next transfer window when he's available?
I see Jonathan staying another season with Barcelona. I think, you know, when Tata Martino came in, one of the things that, you know, surprised me was that Tata Martino, in his first press conference as Barcelona coach, you know, he had to be really careful about what he said during that interview. And it was interesting that one of his questions was specifically directed on Jonathan Dos Santos. Is Jonathan Dos Santos a player that you're going to count with? And Tata Martino was like, I'm going to count with all the players that I have available. You know, we knew from the get-go that if Jonathan Dos Santos was going to play for Barcelona, it's going to be Copa del Rey. And Copa del Rey hasn't started for FC Barcelona just yet. And now he gets this injury, and that basically takes minutes away from Jonathan Dos Santos. But I do not see Jonathan Dos Santos moving out of Barcelona, perhaps after the 2014 World Cup.
And bus is going by in Guadalajara, apparently, over there. Well, yeah, I mean, Dos Santos, whether or not he's available for that World Cup, don't think he's going to be on Miguel Herrera's radar, or, gosh, I mean, whoever's coaching the Mexican national team in 2014, because, well, in the last month, we've had four different people. Chepo de la Torre, of course, being fired after his loss at the Estadio Azteca against Honduras, and Luis Fernando Tena came in to coach the national team against the U.S. They lost 2-0 in Columbus, and then, of course, Victor Manuel Vucetich getting the call up for just two matches. And basically being fired after the loss against Costa Rica and San Jose. Now it's Miguel Herrera, the fourth coach in the last 30-odd days for Mexico. There was this huge press conference here in Mexico City. I believe it was last Friday. It was just absolutely ridiculous to see how this federation operates at the most basic level. The meeting was set for 12:45 p.m. We didn't get started until closer to 1:45. So just 60 minutes of people just sitting there, anticipating what we already knew, by the way, that Vucetich was going to be fired and Herrera was going to come in. You had team owners and representatives leaving the meeting before it even began. Arturo Elias Ayub, who's the former administrator of Pumas and the current administrator for León, a very loyal employee of Carlos Slim, the world's, or I don't know if he's the world's richest man or the second richest man at this point, but the guy's got a lot of cash. and Slim, of course, involved in a huge battle with Televisa and TV Azteca over basically the control of Mexican football as it stands right now. But a lot of people just not satisfied with the way that the federation is behaving. I'll turn to you guys. How ridiculous is it for Mexico to have completely imploded over the last month and to have to go to these lengths to secure a World Cup qualifier? Would any of you have kept Vucetich at the helm?
You've kept him at the helm.
Go ahead, Sam.
Yeah, if we'd keep... I'd have kept him there.
Yeah, would you have kept Vucetich on as the team manager?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it wasn't his fault that he took over the team, the state that he was in. He's the most successful Mexican manager out there. He's, you know, a serious guy, serious manager. You know, obviously they didn't play the best in Costa Rica, but Costa Rica away on a rainy, bad pitch isn't exactly the easiest game anyway. The players looked absolutely knackered the last 15 minutes, which isn't necessarily his fault. Not saying, you know, his game, he was perfect out there. But, I mean, if you want a manager to, a proper manager to steer you through that, then I'd have thought there's nobody better than Vucetich, especially when, you know, he's only been in charge for a matter of weeks. I mean, you know, and I'm not saying anything against Herrera. I mean, I think I wrote a piece on ESPN that, you know, the switch from Vucetich to Herrera says absolutely nothing about either one of them. You know, nobody can now say Vucic is a poor manager, and nobody can, you know, I don't think it's worth changing your opinion on Herrera. You know, I think it says everything about, you know, just what a joke the people who are controlling Mexican football are at the minute. I mean, real lack of planning. You've got the owners of Mexican league clubs making decisions. You've got Jorge Vergara sticking his nose in. And apparently, from what Herrera was saying, Vergara was the one who instigated this change. He was the one who picked up the phone to the Televisa, to Club America owners and the bosses over there, and said, "This is what we need to do. We've got to do it. Let's get everybody together. Let's do it." I mean, what a joke that is. I mean, Chivas, I think, have had an incredible amount of managers, and they've not had very much success over the last few years. So, you know, I don't know how somebody like Jorge Vergara gets a say in national team matters. It's like, I don't know. Like, yeah. The way the Liga MX club owners control, you know, have a large say in who's going to be the national team boss and what should go on. It's like, I don't know, maybe people out there don't know too much about the you know, the Mexican League and its owners. Imagine the Premier League, the owners that are about in the Premier League. So you've got the Glazers at Manchester United, who obviously know very little about football. Yeah, you've got the Americans over at Liverpool. You've got Sheikh Mansour at Manchester City. You've got,
it'd be like Americans choosing the English manager. It's absolutely ridiculous to think about.
Yeah, and then Cardiff, you've got a Malaysian guy. You know, you've got people there. Like, fair enough, they made the money, the businessmen. You know what I mean? And it's exactly the same in Mexico. The people, the majority of people who own the teams are business people who have made a lot of money doing what they do. What they aren't, they haven't done it in football. You know what I mean? They haven't. They're not experts on the game, and I think we can see it's just so shoddy. And you know, this is why you get so many managers for the Mexican national team, because there's nobody with a plan. There's no focus on how it's going to move forward. Right? I know I'm going on a bit now, but. But I've been thinking West. I think we've seen a massive improvement in the game in the United States. Since 1991, they've had five managers. You know what I mean? Mexico, I think, have had six. I think it's around 15 in that time. You know, it just shows a complete lack of planning on the part of the Mexican Federation and the Liga MX owners. And you know, I think it's been an absolute PR disaster, this whole episode for Mexico. I mean, you know, when you talk to people who aren't from Mexico, who aren't involved in the game about it, it's embarrassing for the Mexican game, really. I mean, it's just a disastrous PR. It's been a disastrous PR period for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Johnny, given the fact that, you know, still possible that Mexico misses out on this 2014 World Cup, you know, we're kind of talking about it like it's a given, but it's not a given. Their level of play has just been terrible over the last few months, and there's still a chance that Mexico does not make this 2014 World Cup. If that happens, who's to blame? I mean, is it really Chepo for throwing this? Is it Chepo for not getting the results in the first half of the hexagonal? Is it Jorge Vergara for pulling the trigger on Miguel Herrera for these last two games? Is it Justino Compan? Is it Televisa? Is it all of them? Is it the players? Who's to blame?
My blame number one would go to Justino Compan. And honestly, kind of towards the question you had asked Tom about Vucetich, Justino Compan, one, he made the terrible decision of keeping on Chepo de la Torre after the Gold Cup, after the horrendous summer, that backing to Chepo de la Torre was a huge mistake. It wasted a lot of time. And then when he did finally pull the trigger and letting go of Chepo de la Torre, I personally would have never chosen Vucetich. My two candidates were Miguel Herrera or Tomas Boy. Those were the types of solutions that Mexico needed. And then finally you commit another mistake. You bring in Vucetich. He manages two games, which, you know, he does not provide the results he does not provide what Mexico needed, and then you let him go. That letting go of Vucetich, I'm 50-50. You either keep him or you let him go. I'm okay with either one because he really isn't what Mexico needs at this time. Vucetich, like Tom said, he's a proper manager, and proper managers will serve a proper cycle. And, you know, he just doesn't have what it takes to get Mexico out of a hole that they're currently in. So, yeah, number one blame is Justino Compan, who oversees all of these decisions.
Yeah, just to follow with what Johnny said, I mean, I do agree with the system, Compan, but I think it's just the system that works in Mexico. I think we always, when we explain to someone that doesn't know about Mexican football and tell them, well, who makes the decisions in Mexico? And you have to talk about two TV networks and say, well, you know, there's this guy, Scarragayan, the owner of Televisa, and, you know, he has this power that right now it's really evident. I mean, Pio Herrera and Ricardo Peláez are from America. They won the championship last season. So now let's use that system that has been working pretty well off in the last 2 years and put it in the national team because it's an emergency situation. You know, that's a little bit... It's not the best way that you want to describe your Mexican football because it shows that it's a system that doesn't work for the sport. It works for the economic reasons. Televisa does a lot of money, as does TV Azteca and all these networks that get Mexican football on TV. I mean, I think if you ask a Mexican right now, you know, will the 2014 World Cup be the same if Mexico didn't go? You know, of course not. You know, there's this sentiment that you want to see the Mexican national team playing in Brazil. But at the same time, you have to admit that there's this putrid kind of deal going on that has to finish because you're always going to have this circus going on every 4 years. And, I mean, I still can't believe Ricardo La Volpe stayed the 4 years. Even though he had all this stuff going on against him, like Hugo Sanchez repeatedly talking publicly and saying that his team wasn't playing well, even though that at least the Mexican national team had an idea of what it was playing. Since the Ricardo Antonio La Volpe days, we haven't seen a Mexico team that has had this idea run for at least 4 years. I mean, everything comes sporadic. I mean, it came with Aguirre, and now we don't even know if Pio Herrera is going to stay after the New Zealand game. So, I mean, it's not the proper ways to handle the situations.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking
you've also, you've also had coaches as diverse, and I think this is an important point. As diverse as Hugo Sanchez, Eriksen, Chepo de la Torre, and now Herrera, you know, tactically very different, style-wise very different. I mean, there's no kind of strain of thought running through these decisions. It's kind of like, oh, we're in trouble. What should we do? Oh, we'll throw Herrera and tell him to, you know, call up American players. I mean, in any other country, this would be absolutely ridiculous. Like, you know what I mean? Imagine even in, you know, someone like Argentina, oh, we're not doing well, we'll change the manager again and again. Oh, you know, Newell's old boys are playing well. Oh, yeah, we'll just throw them in, you know what I mean? It's like, come on, what kind of joke is it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they do that, and I think that's the difference. That's the main difference, because a lot of people have been signaling or pointing out that, you know, the U.S. has had just three managers since 1998. Germany has had 10 managers since 1926. That's not the way that Latin American football works, really. You know, there's a quicker trigger down here, and again, you know, Argentina and Brazil do it, and they do it often. But turns out Argentina and Brazil are a little bit better than Mexico. You know, I'm obviously understating the level of play that Argentina and Brazil have compared to Mexico. Obviously, they're a lot better. But it hasn't worked out for Mexico that way. You know, you've had two very close calls in the last decade with Javier Aguirre doing the job both times, 2001-2002 to get to Korea-Japan and 2009-2010 to get to South Africa. Now Aguirre isn't available because he's having some amount of success over in Spain, where he's always been a very competent manager. And you have to go to these lengths to try and sign these managers who are obviously unproven, who have obviously never had the proper time to prepare for a national team. You know, Miguel Herrera being brought in, and they're going to play about four friendly games in the next 14 days or so. You know, that they're going up against Liga Ascenso MX teams this weekend, and after that, they're obviously playing Finland before the New Zealand games. We can expect a couple of more games. It's just very rushed. It's very symptomatic of what's wrong with Mexican football, the lack of competent decision-making, the fact that people that have nothing to do with a proper football education, making the choices based on money and power. I mean, this is nobody has the best interests of the Mexican game in that grouping of owners. The only thing that's on their minds is the $600-700 million that they're all going to lose if Mexico doesn't make the World Cup. And I've made this point over and over again. You know, these guys don't care about you. They don't care about the fans. They care about you enough to take your money. A lot of people were arguing that Mexico versus New Zealand at the Estadio Azteca should be free. I was one of them. You know, how are you going to charge people to watch quite possibly the worst product that you've ever put out there in the last 40 or 50 years? How are you going to charge people to do that? Well, they are. And they're charging quite a bit of money. You know, tickets are as high as $50 for this game. I don't know anybody in their right mind who would pay $50 to watch Mexico play and be entertained for a couple of hours. It's just going to be $50 and bust out the Alka-Seltzers and the Pepto-Bismols and everything that you need to keep your stomach at bay. But we'll close this out by saying that, you know, we're right to say that America, which has been the best team in Mexico for the last 6, 7, 8 months, is the base of the national team now. And when the New Zealand game rolls around, we'll probably see about 5, 6, even 7 players with America pedigree on the pitch. And I say pedigree because we might see Reyes and we might see Ochoa out there. But the alarms are already going off with this decision, and there were already huge doubts being raised. And yesterday we saw a Costa Rica team, Liga Deportiva Alajuelense, go into the Estadio Azteca, face the America starting lineup, which, by the way, features about 5 or 6 of those players that are called up to the national team, and beat them at the Estadio Azteca 1-0. America is eliminated from the CONCACAF Champions League. Only one team had ever crashed out of the group stage of the CONCACAF Champions League. Can anybody guess who that team is?
Chivas last year.
Chivas last year against Shilahu. Yeah, Guatemala. Guatemala coached by Hernan Medford, the former Costa Rica midfielder. So we absolutely slammed Chivas, and we continue to slam Chivas. Now America is gone. I mean, is this going to affect their confidence, and is it going to affect the national team's confidence moving forward?
Before we answer that question, this isn't the first time Alajuelense has upsetted a Mexican team. They defeated Pumas in a CONCACAF Champions League final. Back then, the tournament was different. Still, same club have a history of upsetting Mexican team.
Yeah, well, I mean, 10 players. 10 players and most of these guys getting hometown against the La Palencia. You know, how is this going to affect America going forward? I wrote about this for ESPN. I think it's going to end terribly for America. I think Mexico's going to go to the World Cup, but that's going to hurt the team in the long term because they're going to lose their manager.
Well, I just think it's another extension of the joke that the game's become in the last couple of weeks, to be honest. And I mean, I know that sounds extreme, but I mean, aside from the national team, which, you know, there's obviously no guarantee, like we saw on Tuesday night, Alajuelense, you know, coming, winning 1-0 in the Azteca against, like you said, Eric, you know, the best team that Mexico has at the minute. These things can happen, and they could happen against New Zealand. But I think from the league's point of view, I mean, just what a joke that, you know, America and certain other teams are now without a lot of the starting players. Because there's going to be 2 extended camps now for the national team to prepare for those New Zealand games. I think it's a joke for the league because, you know, in terms of a competitive league, I don't know what it says about that. For example, this weekend, León have got 4 players. They're fighting for a Copa Libertadores place. they petitioned the Mexican Federation to just get two of them back for Saturday's big game against Toluca. And the Federation has said no. I mean, it's just one thing. And, you know, I think from the national team point of view as well, I mean, you know, there's not many federations anywhere in the world that the national team coach would be allowed to take players like Herrera will be able to, and like Vucetic did as well, and get him in a training session in Mexico City and get him to miss club games. I mean, you know, this would never ever happen in Europe, and I think Mexico are incredibly lucky that they've got that. But at the same time, you know, I don't know what it says about the league, to be honest, because now we're going, what we should be talking about, now we should, you know, obviously Mexico should be qualified on paper, but we should be talking on this program about the Liga MX, the playoffs heating up, you know what I mean? And now it's like, I honestly find it a bit difficult to get excited about games this weekend now, knowing that the national team players won't be involved.
And it's just basically following the trend of you know, the type of organization that is the Femex Food, you know, it's unthinkable, you know, to think that in Europe there's going to be that possibility that the federation is going to say, oh, you know, I know the league is still on, but right now the qualification to the World Cup is in doubt because the national team only managed to get one win out of five possible games in the hexagonal. You know, I think... That is just, you know, based on the points, if El Tri does qualify to the World Cup, I mean, it's pretty much embarrassing.
Yeah.
It was pretty much a given.
Is Portugal Federation going to ring up Real Madrid or, you know, Ronaldo, forget it, he can't play for you the next couple of weeks. He's got to prepare for the, you know.
Not even Real Madrid, you know, Porto. Porto, which has plenty of them, and is of their same federation. But they're a Champions League team. They're, you know, obviously trying to fight for the first spots in the Primera Liga over there in Portugal. You wouldn't do that anywhere else.
Yeah, and this is something that goes on in Mexico and Mexican football, where rules basically get made up as they go along. I mean, we've seen it. I mean, the clearest example for me was the relegation last year, La Piedad getting relegated, then getting bought out, then suddenly Veracruz were up there, and then a few other teams changed around. I mean, it's just doing it off the cuff, you know what I mean? You know, just no planning. Oh, what are you going to do? Oh, we're going to do that. Okay, yeah, we can do that. It's like, oh, but we've got a playoff now. All right, well, we're just going to take the players, and it's just like making rules up as, you know, as you go along, and it goes back to that thing from the start. There's got to be somebody right at the top who knows what they're doing, you know, who's got a committee around them with people who also know what they're doing. And don't get me wrong, I think the owners of the clubs should have a say because at the end of the day, they've got a lot of money invested in the product. But they shouldn't be running around making decisions. And you know, it needs to be restructured. Look at US soccer. Look at the Twitter account of US soccer. Look at the website of US soccer. Compare it to the Federation, to the Mexican Federation. Look at the videos and the social media stuff that the US soccer do compared to Mexico. And in a lot of things where you make that US-Mexico comparison, you'd say, well, the US, obviously, that they've got more money. But you can't say that about the Federation, you know what I mean? I mean, it's just, it's behind on so many things. And I think these last 2 weeks have really put it into crystal clear perspective on just how far it is behind.
Yeah, I would definitely have to agree with that as well. And the federation, the comparison at the organizational level is astounding. But yeah, well, in America we trust, I guess, to get to the World Cup. Again, 10 players. This is not the definitive list. But we'll probably see more than five in that final list against New Zealand. We'll obviously keep you posted on anything that we find out. Take a look at our Twitter account at Mex Soccer Show. Our individual Twitter accounts before we move on to our last segment. For Tom Marshall, at Mexico World Cup. For Naib Moran, at Naib Moran. For Johnny Rico, at Johnny Rico. For myself, at Goal Eric. And while America is, you know, one end of the spectrum, being considered to be the base for the Mexican national team, essentially the best team in the league right now, and if not for this situation, would probably be the heavy favorite to move to a back-to-back title run. We move to the other side of the table. And Chivas, dead last, one win this season, 8 points in, I believe it's 14 games or 13 games because they still have one less. But terrible times for Chivas. They've officially entered the relegation battle. They are 14th place, only 1 point ahead of Puebla. If they lose and Puebla gets at least a draw this weekend, they will move into a tie for 15th place. So there's actually a pretty good chance that by the next tournament, the Clausura 2014, we will see Chivas fighting for its life. Initial thoughts on this, you know, I have to, you know, Tom mentioned it before, but we have to mention the fact that Jorge Vergara, owner of Chivas, the worst team in the league, has now apparently exercised his will and is making decisions at the national team.
You couldn't make it up, could you? You know what I mean? You had to write a script of, you know, nobody would believe it.
Yeah, we get a lot of stuff that even Hollywood would consider too unbelievable down here. Absolutely. But, yeah, I mean, Johnny, we'll start with the anti-Chiva crowd. Are you happy to see him this bad? Or is it, you know, now that you work, you know, you're a journalist, you're in there, you're starting to get a feel for numbers and that sort of thing. Is it bad for Mexican football that Chivas is doing so terribly?
You know, Mexican football has a laundry list of problems, and, you know, Chivas being one of them could be, but overall, I am happy. I am happy to see that, you know, the biggest rival of my club is fighting for relegation. You know, just like Boca Junior fans were ecstatic to see River Plate be relegated in Argentina. You know, ask any Real Madrid fan, and I'm sure they'll be happy to see Barcelona relegation. You know, as impossible as that sounds, everyone in Mexico thought Chivas fighting relegation sounded pretty impossible. So, yeah, I'm pretty happy about that. Also, one other side thing, Jorge Vergara nominating Herrera for manager of the national team. There were some rumors floating around that he kind of did that to kind of slow America down, because as bad as Chivas look right now, it only piles it on that America's doing so well.
Yeah, I think the context of that as well is that if America win the title, then they go ahead of Chivas.
Right. You know? Which is still a possibility, you know. I mean, assuming that Mexico wins against New Zealand, then you get 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 players coming back with tons of confidence, with a lot of positive experiences. You get a manager who is probably going to leave the team after that tournament and looking to do his best. There, I mean, whatever happens, Miguel Herrera is going to be back on that sideline for the Liga MX playoffs. So there's still a chance that they win their 12th title, and I think many of us would be ecstatic at that, and kind of be a big middle finger to Chivas and Jorge Vergara. Naib, is there anybody on this Chivas team that you would single out and say, well, this guy's not doing so badly?
You know, I think, you know, this is just talking a little bit about Chivas and the fact that it's all Mexican players playing for the team and so forth. You know, on Monday I watched the Villarreal Athletic de Bilbao game, and I was really impressed with Atletico Bilbao. And as you know, Atletico Bilbao has all the players from the Basque region of Spain. So it has the same ideology as Chivas in that sort of case. But Atletico Bilbao, I see this project that it just keeps booming and booming, even though they're not top three, top four in La Liga, because as we know, those in top four to the top two already reserved for Real Madrid and Barcelona. But, I mean, I think it's a project that was respected with Atletico Bilbao. When Marcelo Bielsa came, you know, they had this huge revolution going with the team. A lot of players came up and up and up. And, you know, in Chivas, we did see the same thing going on with Real and so forth. And then it got crushed when Johan Cruyff came in and so forth. And I think that's where I think a little bit got a little bit messed up. It's that process of building the youth and good players from Chivas. And I think it's been hurting since then. And right now, I mean, it's hard to pinpoint players that are shining for Chivas. No, a player that in my opinion, because of his age and because of the situation that he has been put in, I put Fierro there as a player that has been, you know, a good spark from Chivas. And Fierro has been a good spark since a season ago, I think. And for his age, I think it's important. And right now I was looking at the U-17 Mexico team that is in United Arab Emirates. And there's four players from Chivas. Two of those players are goalkeepers. You know, it tends to happen that Chivas sends field players, not goalkeepers. And I think it says a little bit about the production of players. The number 10 in that U-17 team is Marco Granados, who is a forward, and it's a Chivas player. And I think he's the brightest player of that U-17 team.
Who's the number 9? Tell us about the number 9.
Number 9, Alejandro Diaz. It's a top player. I heard great things about him. Reminds me a little bit of Fierro a little bit, but I think he could be better. You know, he has a good school with Raul Jimenez there, a good player to look up to from the youth ranks. But that's what I see. I mean, Chivas is a team that would send at least 6 players in the U-17, and maybe one of them is a goalie and 5 of them is a field player. Right now, in the U-17, there's 2 goalkeepers and only 2 field players. And I think that sort of says a little bit of the situation that is going on in Chivas.
Becoming more so that Pachuca and Santos and America and well, still Pumas are becoming the driving forces for those U-17 and U-20 teams.
Yeah, and more Santos right now, especially Santos, with the Escobosa call-up. I think the Escobosa call-up is a big surprise, and it says a lot about the process that's going on over there in Santos with Caixinha and Irarragorri. And believing in the youth. There's this player called the Abella dude that plays left-back. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Abella gets a call-up if Piojo stays as coach.
They got rid of Guti Estrada, who had been a mainstay there for about 10 years, to give Abella that position. Any big changes that you would expect? Tom, you're down there in Guadalajara. You're close to the team. I've heard a pretty prominent Guadalajara journalist say that there are 4 players right now that are on the short list for Chivas. Who would you expect to come in for the Clausura 2014 and try to turn this Chivas boat around?
Well, the word is Peña, Carlos Peña, Salcido, Iram Mier, even Osorio from Monterrey. I mean, those are the names.
The same names that we've heard for like the last year.
I don't know. Yeah. I got a feeling Peña's Americanista.
Yeah, no, listen, I mean, those are the names, but let's go through them. Yeah. Peña, why would he come to Chivas? Why would he? I can see absolutely money. No reason.
Money.
Yeah, but I mean, I think Leon have got plenty of money to give him a raise if they want to keep him. And I just, you know, unless they do, obviously that is a factor.
What about Montes?
Salcido, Montes, another, why would he come to Chivas, though? You know what I mean?
28.
He's in a good, but he's, you know, he's in a good club, and he's possibly even got a chance of going to Europe. I mean, Matosas has been, you know, saying that he does have the quality. I think the only one that's going to come definitely is Salcido. But then again, if anyone's watched Salcido over the last few weeks, I mean, the question really there is, is he really the person you want? And I don't, to be honest, I don't think he really is.
Sign Salcido and Torrado. That'd be great.
Yeah. So, I mean, those are some of the names doing the rounds. I think against Pachuca, the 3-1 defeat on Sunday, I think it was a low, and there was fans outside Jorge Vergara's like private suite chanting, extra security called in. It was a kind of felt like, well, only time will tell if it was like kind of a watershed moment. I know the Resistencia Chivas, which is a group in Guadalajara, which you know, basically petition and do demonstrations to try and promote change within the club. I know they've got a meeting with the directors in the next couple of weeks. They're going to try and implement some changes there. It's just a mess at the minute with Chivas. I think, like we just mentioned then, it's like, you know, there's plenty of other clubs at the minute who are, you know, working really hard on the youth system, and Chivas can't rely on that anymore. Marco Fabian, off at half time. I mean, I really think he has to leave. I mean, he's just becoming a big joke now in Guadalajara.
Yeah,
that same
journalist that Eric was talking, his name is Pedro Antonio Flores, said that there could be a sort of switch, Marco Fabian going to Tigres and Salcido coming to Chivas.
Yeah, I mean, Salcido, I think, wanted to come to Chivas when he came. Apparently there wasn't an offer, that's the word. His family was quite happy and stuff, but it didn't happen. But yeah, Marco Fabian off at half-time. Just a running joke now. I just think he definitely needs to leave. You know, his photos on Twitter have been partying. Then this week he's split up with this Televisa girlfriend or whatever. And now he's got a new girlfriend, and it's like it's just becoming an ongoing joke.
We're seeing Marco Fabian more on TV novelas than records.
Yeah, he cheated on his girlfriend, who's an actress, with the moving girl. Or something, yeah. Like somebody who works at the furniture place. I mean,
the quotes from the girl, man. Jesus. Oh my god! Let me type them. These are well worth it. Right, they interviewed the girl who is supposed to be his new girlfriend. Al principio se me hizo muy feo y no era de mi gusto, pero con el trato noté que es un chavo buen onda. What is that?
Well, you know, basically, for those of you who don't speak the Espanol, when I first met him, I thought he was a pretty ugly guy. But
really
afterwards, very ugly guy. But afterwards, when he started chatting with me, I came to realize that he was very sweet. Which basically means if you're familiar with these sort of relationships, he has a lot of money. And he's famous, you know. He's
and
still
again,
very ugly.
A PR disaster, you know. It goes back to this thing. I mean, what is going on with this? With Mexican football in general.
Time for several of those guys to go. You know, I think you have to get rid of Fabian. You have to get rid of Enriquez. You have to get rid of Sabah. Reynoso. You have to get rid of who's the... who's a left back who was also eligible for the U.S. Yeah, Ponce has just dropped a huge, huge amount of his playing level has gone down. I would bring in, first and foremost, you got to fix that defense. You got to fix that defense. They got rid of Johnny Magallon, and Johnny Magallon is having kind of a renaissance over at León, doing very, very well. I would, you know, before you bring Salcido back, bring Magallon back.
Yeah.
Or maybe go... bother Pachuca and buy Miguel Herrera. That Miguel Herrera. You know, go.
Yeah.
What's go that? On. No, yeah, I mean, there's plenty of players that you can definitely purchase and develop without spending the reported $20 million that Vergara is going to allow over the next winter because, you know, things have gone to this. They've gone from bad to worse, and now this guy who had been penny pinching for the last 5 years or so, saying, "Oh well, you know, I'm recovering from the amount of money that I put into the stadium." I mean, the state government paid for half of that stadium. How long is he going to use the Estadio Omni Life as a crutch to not really invest in that team? The one time that he won the championship back in 2006, you had several players on that team who were purchased, who came from outside of the club. Osvaldo Sanchez, Bofo Bautista. Shout out to Jorge Aranguren, by the way. Bofo Bautista's biggest fan. You had a couple of other players who played key roles on that team who weren't from the youth system, and they were brought up with players from the youth system, really important players like Magallon, like Omar Bravo, Venado Medina, Reynoso, a couple of other guys as well.
Even Flamingo Medina was playing good.
Yeah, you're right. So,
Flamingo Medina.
That guy, man, what a terrible career he has had after that one good game that he had against Brazil back in like 2003. Oh, well. Well, we'll close that.
One quick thing to add. Eric, I agree with you that obviously they need to, you know, invest in players and stuff. But at the end of the day, I look at some of the players that are there and, you know, they've been good players, you know what I mean? And I think that, you know, obviously they do need to buy, but I think there's something more profound in the club. Like there's a malaise, like a sickness in the club, which is just the atmosphere, you know what I mean? It's like the atmosphere isn't good. It's just, and I honestly think it comes right from the top. And I think it's going to take a lot now for Chivas to get out this way. It's like they're digging their own grave in a way, you know what I mean? It's always harder and harder to get out. And I don't know, it's almost like they need an absolute sea change, not just in a couple of players here and there, but, you know, real significant change in how the club is run. I mean, it's just people on the street in Guadalajara, big Chivas fans, just don't like the side, you know? They don't like the club at the minute. And I think that's a massive problem. Apart from being bottom of the league.
And then on top of all of this, Ortega doesn't have a secure job spot, right, Tom?
Who's that, sorry?
We don't know if Ortega's going to be the coach next season.
Well, I mean, I'd bet that he wouldn't be, although he seems to think he will be. You know, I mean, it's just the same thing with the national team. It's about, you know, putting somebody in place with the process and really backing it. And, you know, if things go really, really bad, then obviously you have to reconsider. But you have to give someone a decent time in charge. I mean, if you're hiring, when you hire a coach, you have to be pretty damn sure that this is the coach for you, you know what I mean? And I think that they haven't really thought through before hiring a coach who it should be, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's this guy named Chepo de la Torre who... job.
And he was watching American football this week.
Guys, we laughed, though, but that would be a huge opportunity to revindicate his career.
Yeah.
You know? I think that's like the perfect job for him after the failure at the national team.
Love him back here, and I think he's like his discipline and stuff. I mean, I think it really is what is required at the minute. I mean, I don't know. I mean, so many rumors about players partying till all hours, and they come from good enough sources where you tend to think there is some truth to it. You know what I mean? So I don't know. Someone like Chepo to come in and really just establish himself, but then, you know, Vergara said bad things about Chepo over the last couple of years. Vergara just doesn't know when to shut it down. No?
Who hasn't he said bad things about? You know, Vergara's just a quote machine.
But the thing is, he's closing doors now. You know, he's closing a lot of doors and making it more and more difficult that people want to come to the club. And that's when we went back to this player, someone like Peña. Why? I can't. For me, I if I was Peña, unless I was doubling my money, because he must be making very, very good money with Leon. There's a club with a lot of money and they pay the players very well. I mean, look at Rafa Márquez and some of the other big names there. I mean, I imagine Peña's making good money. I just can't imagine why someone like Peña would want to come to Chivas now, honestly. And, you know, Salcedo, you can understand because it's his home club, he's coming back. But I think he might be past it now. Or, you know, maybe it's just a couple of months of bad form. But, you know, he's at the age now where you have to question if he's still got it.
Wow, this is sounding more and more like a post-mortem, so I think we'll cut it off there in this week's episode on that sour Chivas note anyway. Tune back in. We'll be back next week with another episode. We'll preview the Mexico-Finland game and we'll talk a little bit more about the impending Liga MX playoffs. Mexicans abroad, you know what we usually cover on this show, everybody. Thank you very much for listening one more time. Tom Marshall, Naeem Moran, Johnny Rico, I'm Eric Gomez. We'll see you next time.